I know since you worked on the Guinness conversion, there have been a number of groups that have filed for fund conversions last year and then into this year. Have you noticed any differences in the approach that these groups have used versus what you used with Guinness? And have there been any helpful developments, let's say, out of the SEC, you know, since then?
So there have been a few people who followed in the Guinness footsteps, and I think you're going to see more. I think that, you know, Guinness Atkinson started converting two funds that were very, relatively speaking, a manageable size. And since then, there have been two very major complexes that are, one has already converted a number of funds and has just announced they're converting more. And then the second one has just recently filed their first set of papers on a conversion. And we've got a couple more big complexes that have announced that they're looking at the situation. So I think that you're going to see that a lot of complexes that want to have ETF exposure because their investors want ETF exposure are going to take the conversion route. So what have we seen that's different? I mean, we have seen a couple of things. The first thing I would say is, you know, Guinness Atkinson had a very compressed time frame. We worked on this project for a long time, having a lot of conversations, demonstrating essentially to the SEC how we could line up all the pieces of this transaction together and that they could be comfortable seeing that shareholders were not going to be harmed by this transaction. And so that was really the groundwork that Guinness Atkinson laid for the rest of the industry. Now, as you go forward, you're seeing a couple of different things. First of all, you're kind of seeing a longer time frame. I mean, from the first initial filings that I've seen relating to funds that have converted to the actual conversion date, the time frame window is really going to about 9 or 10 months at a minimum.
And what is it that's driving some of that timeline?
Part of that is because you do have a number of pieces that you need to line up here. One of the most important ones is the issue of shareholders who don't hold in a brokerage account. In the typical mutual fund structure, it's not uncommon to see what we call direct investors. Those are people who receive the shares of the fund. They purchase the shares of the fund directly from the fund complex. The shares are not necessarily held in their brokerage account. But an ETF has to be held in a brokerage account. And so you need time to reach out to those shareholders and contact them and help them either make a decision to exchange their shares for shares of a different fund in your complex, or to help them move the shares into a brokerage account. Now, the brokerage industry has a very smooth process. It's called ACATS, A-C-A-T-S. And that should help people move shares directly into a brokerage account pretty quickly. But there are some bells and whistles around that. You've got identity issues that need to be, sometimes those identity issues need to be addressed, and that can delay it, but it doesn't take very long. So once the shareholders decided they want to continue in that strategy, it's pretty easy for them to migrate their mutual fund shares into the brokerage account, and then your conversion to an ETF can happen pretty smoothly.
So earlier you walked us through some of the shareholder considerations, such as certain investors not being able to hold the ETF directly. Let's discuss the shareholder considerations a bit more.
There are some types of investors who are not permitted to hold ETF shares, and that those investors tend to be in the retirement space. And so you need to consider, when you're considering a conversion, whether you need another solution for that particular investment pool, depending on how big that pool is as a part of the fund that you're converting. So one of the things that you're seeing in terms of the length and time frame to go from your initial consideration of the concept of converting to an ETF to the actual execution is that time frame needs to be there in order for you to have conversations with investors about what's best for them. One of the things that we saw last summer when the second big group, JP Morgan, decided to announce conversion is they filed in addition to filing a supplement, they also filed their supplement as a communication under Rule 425. So that's a communication that somebody is permitted to make in connection with a merger transaction. And that means that you can file something that has quite a bit of detail, but is not a full prospectus. And you can have conversations about that filing without having to have a full effective prospectus online. So I think that's one of the innovations that we've been seeing, is that people are going to start using that when you're converting a mutual fund to an exchange traded fund. And that's something that's not available for a private fund conversion, but it is available for the mutual fund to ETF conversion. In most situations, you are going to see an immediate cost savings by operating in the ETF model versus a mutual fund. So I think that there's another really interesting thing that's happened in this next round of filings where mutual funds are converting to exchange traded funds. And that is, again, you know, advisors are very focused on dealing with their shareholders. And if you have shareholders who cannot hold an ETF because the type of account doesn't permit it, or you have shareholders who are just not responding in some way, shape, or form to move their shares into the brokerage account, one of the things that I think is going to come out is that you're going to see advisors doing an exchange of those shareholders into their mutual fund, their money market fund, or into some other kind of asset that they can put that shareholder in until the shareholder decides where they want to go. So what's really important about that, again, it means from the advisor perspective, the assets stay in-house, but they're going to be able to deal only with converting the assets for shareholders who have already moved those shares into a brokerage account. And that really helps them, because you can't have an ETF held directly. It has to be held in a brokerage account. The other thing that I think is really important about that is, you know, remember, ETFs don't deal in fractional shares, right? So on the books of the ETF, it's a whole unit only. But when you get into financial intermediaries, they're still doing the sub-accounting and fractional share accounting for ETFs. So it's super important for advisors who are doing a conversion to make sure that as much of their shareholder base as possible has gotten the shares into the brokerage accounts. I am not as affected by the activity of some shareholder to come into the fund or out of the fund. The APs run the creation and redemption side of it.
So for our audience, what is an AP?
Those are the authorized participants. Those are your very major market participants. But myself as an investor, I'm either purchasing my shares or selling my shares on the secondary market. And the only gain I'm going to have is based on my decision. And that's normally referred to as externalizing the tax effect of the ETF investment. And I think that's very appealing to shareholders.